Okay, hello everyone and welcome to HQ Overtime, the official post-game show for Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors team site. My name is John Godis, an HQ editor and host of the headquarters. Sean Woodley will be joining me momentarily to discuss Game 3 of the first round series between the Pacers and Raptors, a 101-85 win for the Raptors. They go up 2-1 in their first round series. Just a couple housekeeping items off the top here. You can submit your questions for us either in the comments of our post-game show article at raptorshq.com or by tweeting at RaptorsHQ and myself at John Godis. That's JohnGaudes. We will definitely try to get to everyone if you reach out. We're already up to 8, so we are exponentially improving episode by episode here. Also, if you want to keep up with this show on the go, you can download the Mixlr app for iOS or Android and follow Raptors HQ. Sean, this was a big win for the Raptors, a 16-point win. It didn't really feel even that close at times. Obviously big because they get home court back. Just your overall impressions of this one.
I mean, it was a big win, and it could have been a lot bigger, really. The Raptors kind of shot terribly most of the night. They were 10 of 32 from three, which is, you know, pretty ugly. I mean, at one point they were like 4 for 19 or 4 for 20. So they kind of turned it around in the fourth quarter. You know, Lowry and DeRozan turned it around and actually played well. DeRozan got to the line 9 times, which was nice to see, but he still shot 7 of 19, and Lowry was 8 of 21 as well. So, I think a lot of the looks they got and missed came in like the flow of the offense, and there was some really nice ball movement, especially in the first half. I mean, that first half was maybe the best first half I've seen them play all season on both ends combined. And yeah, I think, you know, a few more made shots and this one is even more of a blow than it actually was.
Yeah, I thought, and we can start with DeRozan maybe here. Yeah, he started really well. He started 4 of 8, I think 4 of 6 even in the first quarter, but 12 points in the first quarter with 6 free throw attempts. He started the game really well, and that was good for the team to see him get going, but kind of in a vacuum. He had that one play where he was covered in the post and then started swinging the ball. That was kind of the one emergent assist, or at least hockey assist, that he had in that first quarter. But otherwise, it was still a lot of the same. He was just kind of making shots. Am I wrong there?
No, there was still a lot of bad looks that you would normally not want to see him take in this sort of DeMar of old. I think this is like, I was talking about this with our pal Harsh DeVay on Twitter just before we came on here, and I think a lot of what DeRozan's doing, he's forcing a lot. He's not, you know, looking to play make as much as he usually does. He's like still taking the ball to traffic when, you know, every time Paul George has given him a lane in this series, it's led to a Miles Turner block. Like, he should know what's coming.
Yeah.
But he still keeps doing it. And like, maybe it's just a matter of him wanting to get going and trying to get this offense going to help the team. I think it's probably more of a human nature, psychological thing. I think Paul George is clearly in his head. They're friends. You know, they work out together in the summer from the same hometown. They go back a long ways. And I think, you know, I think it's sort of human nature to just want to try to go at someone you're that close with and who is clearly dominating you and trying to like, that's just it's natural to want to try to keep forcing it, even if it's not working. So, I mean, I've gone all along thinking that this is just the worst possible matchup for DeMar of any possible matchup the Raptors could have had. I mean, he's done a pretty good job against smaller wings this year. Even guys like Jimmy Butler, who normally give him trouble, he's been fine against. But Paul George is like 6'10", and he's super physical, and he has the physical advantage over DeRozan, and DeRozan can't use his little post moves or anything like that to find space. So I just think this is probably where we're going to see the rest of the series. I think it was nice to see him hit some of those shots that he would normally be making, and just even the tough shots that he normally makes. It was nice to see him make some of those. But yeah, I think we can probably expect more of these sort of weird, kind of okay games for the rest of the series. I mean, he got to the free throw line 9 times. 21 points on 19 shots isn't the worst. So I think we'll take that. And, you know, this is all the Raptors really need to beat this Pacers team.
Yeah, and I mean, Lowry again didn't have a good shooting night along with DeRozan. I mean, Lowry was 8 for 21, so it even percentage-wise balances out to where DeRozan was for his 7 for 19. So again, those guys aren't shooting well. The team's succeeding because in spite of it, I should say. It just seems like they're going to be okay in this series. I thought this game was a little more fascinating from the aspect of seeing what Indiana would do. And I know in the last 24 hours we've had separate head coaches call out the idea of adjustments from game to game, but it felt like this was a game where Indiana actually had to make some sort of adjustment, because Valanciunas was killing them inside. They got killed by shots in game two, and it felt like they made a couple adjustments, and we can go through those here. They played at times Mahimi and Turner together, and mm-hmm. that seemed to throw off the Raptors' starters a little bit. Do you see that as an issue maybe in game four? Because we saw Scola, you know, he's looked lost most of the series, but when he was matched up with Turner, it was just like all for naught.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Turner was amazing in this game. He was 7 of 12, 17 points, 8 boards. And yeah, he kind of torched Scola in the start of that quarter. But, you know, Indiana, it seems this entire series that it's just been, if it's not more than one guy doing it, then they're still sort of dead in the water, because even when Turner was going, Paul George had a horrible second half. He went 6 of 19 for the night, 1 of 8 from 3. And, you know, there needs to be more than one guy lifting up Indiana's offense, because, like, they just there's only so much that one guy could take them, right? So I did like that adjustment that they made, and I thought it was weird that Casey stuck with Scola for about 8 minutes in that third quarter. Normally, he's had a pretty quick hook when it's been a matchup that doesn't really work, especially lately. But, I mean, he left him in there, and they didn't get burned. I think they were only a minus one in the time that he was on the floor. So Indiana couldn't really take advantage of that, and that's the best. Those are the pockets where, you know, you can really make a run against the Raptors. And then, you know, the Raptors put in the Lowry in the death lineup, and with Lowry in the bench mob, the death lineup, Lowry in the bench mob with Carroll instead of Ross to start the fourth quarter, and it was just kind of all she wrote from there. So Indiana, it was a good adjustment. They just didn't really take advantage of it.
Yeah, I thought they could have done a lot more with that third quarter with that lineup. I think Turner picked up a technical foul at an inopportune time, and part of that was Valanciunas was frustrating them all night. They were, I don't know why they were frustrated with the calls, because they're still, like, usually Jack and Matt kind of hype this up a little bit beyond what the reality is, but the Pacers are holding down Valanciunas on a lot of these offensive rebound attempts, and they're holding guards on the attack, so it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to be arguing the whistle, but because they got in a little bit of foul trouble and a little bit of technical foul trouble this game, it seemed like they were kind of stymieing their own runs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this team is very, very I just think it's easy to figure out on offense. Like, I mean, with in terms of a team figuring out their offensive defensively. I'm not scared by, you know, the secondary cast. I mean, Vogel went with like a 7-man rotation pretty much tonight. He only had 7 guys play more than 10 minutes. Lavoie Allen didn't really play at all after the first quarter. It's a very, very thin team, and I think you saw the Raptors' depth really shine through today, just up and down the lineup. And can we get to Damari Carroll now?
We can, yeah. I was going to just bring up one more thing about the Pacers, because I do feel like this was like this. After two games of not really knowing who this team was beyond Paul George, I kind of getting a sense of who they are. And, you know, Jan Mahimi doesn't look right. He played 24 minutes. I'm not sure why they're not giving any run to Jordan Hill other than in garbage time. But, I mean, that's really my thoughts on that. But, talk about Carroll a little bit here. 35 minutes. Obviously, that just blows well over what the minutes cap was, which was, as we were told, 20 minutes. It's probably the best he's looked post-injury. He was impactful. I'm not going to say he was fully back to himself. He was 7 for 16, made some shots, but also, you know, forced things a little bit. But defensively, he was pretty solid.
Yeah, he was a monster defensively. I think I can't really remember George getting to the basket all that often when Carroll was on him. And there were a few examples where it looked like opening night where he was just smothering him and forcing him to pass it off or forcing him to put up these tough shots. And I was really encouraged. I also think on offense, he was sort of one of the main perpetrators of them not knocking down those open looks, because his off-ball movement was so good. Yeah. And like, that's just something they really missed without him. And, you know, now that he's back, it seems like almost, you know, maybe he's like, what, 85-90%, and he's getting back into the flow of the offense. And, you know, you just see this, he, like, you get the ball in the corner, he would pass it off, and then he would just like flash over to the other side, and then, you know, be open for a weak side three. And that's just the stuff that they were missing, that sort of IQ stuff. It was just really encouraging. And he was just like really, you know, he had 4 offensive rebounds in this game. He was just a monster in terms of, you know, just getting in there sort of out of nowhere and just diving in for these offensive boards to keep the possessions alive. And, you know, that's huge against the Pacers, because you know, if you are crashing the offensive boards and not getting them, they can run, for one. And number two, their offense is so, you know, so crappy, really, that, you know, the more offensive possessions you can get and the more points you can put up, like, it's just, it makes it so much more trickier for them to come back, because they just, their offense is so, it's so tough for them to get it going. So everything Carroll did tonight was just, it was awesome to see. It gave me the feels from opening night.
I thought, yeah, you're right about everything there. I thought that this was the best activity we've seen from the Raptors so far this series. I mean, for the most part, playing into that first half, their great play was the activity of Carroll playing heavy minutes in the first half. Lowry was all over the floor, fighting for loose balls, poking out offensive rebounds. Valanciunas was doing what he's done the entire series. Like, their activity was just so much better than the Pacers, which is kind of what I expected to see coming into this series. Because the Pacers have kind of been, you know, nonchalant these last few weeks. I mean, Paul George has picked up his play, but I expected a lot more from guys like George Hill on the activity side of things. You know, he is not shooting the ball that well, but is not putting a lot of effort in beyond doing a solid job in the one-on-one coverage on Lowry. But, yeah, I thought their activity level was great, and seeing Carroll be a part of that was really awesome tonight.
Yeah, how much do you think it, like, weighs on the minds of the Pacers bigs that, like, every time a ball is up, they're just going to be fighting with a man bear for the ball? Like, Valanciunas is just everywhere.
Yeah, and it's not just, like, his strength, because, you know, he could get called on over the back fouls if he was just jumping up over guys, but he finds a way to kind of, you know, get his body in between a couple of guys so that, you know, they're left arm barring him rather than putting their body into him, and he's done an excellent job in this series of coming in from, you know, where guys don't have a feel for him, they don't have their bodies on him, and they're looking up at the basket, and then he comes in and sneaks his way to the offensive glass. Like, his IQ, I think, has shown a lot in this series as well.
Yeah, and I mean, there were a couple plays too where just the continued progression with him with the kickouts and things like that from the post. There was one, he got called for a travel on the play, but he backed down, I think it must have been Miles Turner. It was either Turner or Mahimi. And he backed him down for, like, it almost was like 5 seconds that he did it. Called for the travel, but just before the whistle blew, he threw like a dart of a pass up to the top of the key. And I was like, that is like not Jonas Valanciunas, but I'd really enjoy that if that was him going forward. He's just made so many, like, he's made improvements all season, but a lot of them are just really coming to fruition in this series. And this, even plays like that that don't result in anything, actually result in turnover, are really encouraging.
Yeah, so let's talk about how this kind of shifts now into game four. And it's a shorter rest, obviously. So Carroll coming off 35 minutes, you don't know entirely how he's going to feel. You know, it's not even 48 hours. The Saturday game is a 2 p.m. start, 2 p.m. Eastern. I don't know if I've got it memorized by Central Time, but it's an afternoon game.
I think it's 3 Eastern, 2
Central. 3 Eastern, 2 Central. See, I memorized the time that matters to me. Yeah, so I don't know if we're going to see that much of Carroll, so we might see the reemergence of Norman Powell, and this kind of ties into a question Russell Peddle had for us on Twitter. Do you think we'll see Norm Powell on in the lineup in Game 4, and were you surprised that he didn't play at all in Game 3?
I mean, I think I would have been more surprised if Carroll didn't play the minutes that he did, and I think, you know, I think a big reason Powell got into Game 2 was the early fouls on Carroll plus the injury to Ross. Like, I don't think, I mean, really, it's reasonable to think that he wasn't even penciled in to be in the rotation until those things happened that weren't foreseen. So I think if this is the minute output you're going to get from Carroll, I think you're okay without Powell in there, especially if Carroll's going to be good defensively on Paul George, which is what the biggest problem's been and what what Powell brings most. So I don't know. Yeah, maybe if Carroll can't play 35 minutes again, then maybe Powell gets in for 10 minutes or something like that. But the way I'd like to see Powell get his minutes, and this probably ties into another conversation we're going to have, is about, and we sort of already touched on it, was Luis Scola. He played 16 minutes tonight. I believe he played 10 in game two. Yeah,
12 and 10. I don't know if it was in that order in games one and two. And he went a little bit over that this time. And I know that, like, the threshold for everybody watching is about 10 minutes. They got away with it this time. But, yeah, I'd still like to see that. And I'm sure I'm not alone. His minutes kind of slimmed down a little bit because he's not giving the team virtually anything. Like, he actually hit a three tonight, which I was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, when LaVoy Allen's not in there, like, he's just sort of overmatched by the stretchier bigs that they have. Like, LaVoy Allen is fine because he's not really an offensive threat and he doesn't really stretch it, so that you can get away with Scola there. But, I mean, Solomon Hill is always near the perimeter. Miles Turner, obviously, Scola has no hope of stopping. And so the thing, I mentioned this on our podcast on Tuesday night, I guess it was, where I'd like to see like a super small starting lineup, especially if, you know, going forward, LaVoy Allen's going to lose his starting job. Like he fell out of the starting lineup in the second half. I wouldn't mind seeing a starting lineup with Carroll at the four and Powell at the three. That way you have sort of a switchy duo you can use. You got a couple options to throw at Paul George, and that also just eliminates Scola's minutes. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, you might get back some rebounding if you have Carroll guarding Miles Turner, but at the same time, I think you'll be okay with Miles Turner killing you and not Paul George if you have a couple guys who can guard him. So, I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, I tweeted this out earlier. It's only a matter of time. Like, any NBA coach is going to figure out that the Raptors are starting a player who's not giving them anything, you know, can barely get off the floor, has no matchup except for LaVoy Allen in this series. And you can see the gears kind of turning for Frank Vogel. He played two different lineups that exposed Scola. He played Turner at the four, and he played Paul George at the four. And Casey reacted to the Paul George at the four by playing Carroll on him and moving Patterson. But, you know, it's only going to be a matter of time before we see Luis Scola out there with Paul George moved down to the four, just based on how Casey is so rigorous in his minutes rotation.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that in that case, he would probably have the quick hook like he has at times in the last few weeks here, but that's just a horrifying thought.
Yeah. I don't think those two are going to match up, but I could see that that adjustment is going to be one that Casey might have to make. If Vogel's going to keep LaVoy Allen out of the lineup, and it seems that way, then there's going to be less opportunity for Scola to be in this series because he'll constantly be matched up with somebody he can't guard.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want him on CJ Miles either, right? Like, none of that is a winning situation.
Okay, so I'm running out of topics here. It was obviously a big win. Let's look forward to Game 4. Do you expect the Raptors to win Game 4 at Bankers Life? And will they be able to wrap this up in five? I've still got Raptors in five as my prediction. I'm staying confident, but I don't know how you feel about this.
Well, this is actually a question that we just got from Big RL at Let's Go Lesko, so we can shout out him before we answer. I picked Raptors in five as well. I'm still pretty confident that's what's going to happen. I think the Raptors have kind of figured out the formula, and I think we've seen like the last couple of games, the Raptors have sort of reverted back to their, you know, low turnover ways. I think game one was a lot of nerves related turnovers, and I think that's sort of gone now. And, you know, if the Pacers aren't getting turnovers, there's only 11 Raptors turnovers today. The Pacers, like we've talked about, their half-court offense just isn't good enough. And, you know, there were a few examples today, too, when they got out running and they missed the Bonnie layups, and they just can't afford that because that's such a big part of their offense because their half-court is so bad. So I think the Raptors have kind of figured out the formula. I think they've proven that they can get by without Lowry and DeRozan playing their best. And I think the Raptors do have counters if the Pacers do decide to go small more often. That's where you can sort of use Carroll. We haven't really seen Carroll at the four very much, especially in the playoffs, and like we saw it a bit in the final couple games when he was in the regular season, but we haven't really seen him in the playoffs all that much. And I think, you know, that's something that they can still go to if the Pacers decide to go small, you know, pretty much the entire game. So I think the Raptors have the formula figured out. I think they've extinguished the demons of game one, and I would expect this is wrapped up in five.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the stats here with Indiana, like the Raptors took 36 more shots than they did tonight.
That's,
I mean,
wild.
What's the recipe for success for Indiana? And I know we don't want it to happen, but I mean, for me, you know, Miles Turner took 12 shots. Paul George took 19 shots. I think that Monte Ellis and George Hill have to be taking at least 12 shots a game. I think they just need more balance on offense. If they're going to do anything in this series, I think they need Monte to be a lot better than he is. And I think that they need something out of George Hill.
Yeah, and I mean, asking Monte to be better than what he is a lot, because Monte has not been very good this season, really. And, you know, there's such a just the efficiency of Indiana's offense just can't hold up, especially the Raptors are keeping the pace nice and low. I believe coming into this game, it was at about 93.4 or something like that is the pace for the series, which is, you know, very much in the Raptors' advantage, considering how inefficient the Pacers' offense is. So even if those guys are shooting, they have to be shooting at a kind of an unsustainably higher rate just to keep it up, because, you know, the reason there was so much success for the Pacers in game one was the secondary guys, in addition to Paul George, had nice games. Monte Ellis was 3-for-4 from three, which is was a huge boost for them because it doesn't happen all that often. And I'm not sure you can count on that happening anymore in the rest of the series. I think the Raptors have sort of figured it out. I think Indiana's kind of out of moves.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're both right. I think this is probably going to end in five. If they can pull out game four, I think that game five might be predetermined here. So we'll get to listener questions here in about 3-4 minutes on HQ Overtime. I'm John Godis, and Sean Woodley is my guest tonight. Quickly looking at the Miami and Charlotte series, we're feeling pretty confident about the Raptors in this series right now. What did you see in the first couple games there? And do you feel like, I think the hot topic right now is the Miami shooting sustainable, and should we be very, very nervous that that team is going to be shooting 50 to 60% throughout the playoffs?
I mean, get it out of their system now, I guess, when it's not totally necessary playing against the banged up Charlotte team that doesn't have Nick Batum anymore. I mean, yeah, get it out of their system now. I mean, I think I heard it today. I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast with Tom Haberstroh. And they mentioned that the game one of that series was the most efficient game in Miami Heat history on offense. So, like, yeah, that's probably not sustainable. Right now they're shooting 52.9% from three. That's not going to last, hopefully, you would think. That just doesn't seem like, you know, you can't keep that up for a sustained period of time, especially once you move on past one series. They're shooting 57.8% from the field, 8% higher than anyone else in the league in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it's going to come back down to earth. I still would have liked Charlotte's chances of making it a series if Nick Batum wasn't out for the rest of the series, but I think that kind of seals it for them. So what do you sort of think about the matchup with the Heat? I'm still sort of torn because I can't really figure the Heat out. I'm still, you know, adjusting to the fact that they're going four out with Luol Deng at the four, and it's a totally different look than what they had at the start of the regular season.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll preface this by saying that what I was most excited for heading into this playoff run is a competitive, you know, long second round series, because there's going to be so much angst around this first round series, you know, whether they can actually win it, whether they can pull it out. I think we're seeing now that this is definitely a team that can get over the Pacers, even with one of their three best players not performing up to, and you know, their two best players still aren't shooting that well. But when it comes to the Heat, man, like, Josh Richardson is coming out, Luol Deng is having a fantastic playoff series so far in two games, and they're a frightening team at this point. But I think the Raptors do match up decently well. I think that Valanciunas, just as a last point, Valanciunas is a decent deterrent playing the way he is to Hassan Whiteside, who is such a big cog in what the Heat are doing right now.
Well, I mean, you saw last night in game two, Al Jefferson had a massive game going against Whiteside, and that's Whiteside's sort of knock on defense, right? Is, you know, he's great at just blocking shots when guys are coming towards the rim, but in terms of his post defense, he's still sort of wiry, still sort of spindly. I think Valanciunas could sort of bully him a little bit he hasn't really gone to the post up all that often in this series, but he hasn't really had to. It's been more of a pick and roll type attack. But, you know, I think you could sort of adjust how you use Valanciunas in a series against the Heat to sort of take advantage of Whiteside's, you know, issues defending big post guys. But yeah, that'd be a really good series. And, you know, they're getting sort of a crash course on how to defend a guy like Kyle Lowry defending Kemba Walker right now. And Goran Dragic has played pretty good defense so far in the series. Obviously Joe Johnson looms heavily. I don't really know how. I'd have to look more. I'd have to watch more Heat film just to sort of get an idea of how I think the Raptors would match up, because it's tough to call. Like, I would not be, you know, making a definitive I'm not making any definitive statements right now.
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation, and probably not one we should be having, you know, up 2-1 in a series, but having nonetheless. Let's jump into some listener questions here. Sure. Quite a few of them from HQ staff. Let's get into those first. Is it weird for Sean to be on a Raptors HQ podcast and technically not be the host?
I'm digging it, man. It's way less work. I have to not worry about my ins and outs and not being awkward. I can just sort of go, and if I am awkward, then I defer to you because you're the host and you decided to have me.
Yeah, then it's my fault. And I should note that Sean still uploads all our shows to the iTunes feed, so he still does half the work, even though he's not on every show.
It's like a fun.
I've got another one from Russell. What do the Raptors have to accomplish for Raptors Twitter to ever become a happy place? I'm guilty of this. I was pretty angsty during this game about Scola, but what do you think?
Well, yeah, I had a similar moment where I was just like ragging on DeRozan, and I was like, what am I complaining about? They're up 23 right now in the second quarter. But yeah, like, I don't know, 3 straight titles, and even then I think people would be like, where's the fourth? Why don't we have a fourth one? Break it up. Dwight Casey sucks.
Where's James Johnson?
Where's James Johnson? So yeah, I don't know. I'm what was the question? Oh yeah.
We answered never, it.
Yeah, it's never going to be content.
We have so many to go through here. We got 2 from Mitch Robson. His first one is, what would you personally give up to see Scola not in the starting lineup anymore?
I don't know, because it's weird, because before this game, I didn't think Scola had played all that bad. He just sort of held his own, and I think a large part of that was LaVoy Allen being his opposition most of the time when he was on the court. And like, even though he wasn't hitting threes, he was grabbing some sort of gutsy rebounds and just sort of blending in and not causing issues. But yeah, if they're going to go small, I'd give up the headquarters. No, I couldn't do that.
You would not do that.
No.
I don't know. Give up the headquarters. I would not give up anything. I
give up Twitter
for
like an hour, because it'd be good for me. I don't know.
Get out and enjoy the sunlight.
Yeah, I'll go for a walk. I'll give up not being a fat piece of crap.
That's not giving up anything. I'm gonna say I'm not giving up anything, because yeah, I really don't care that much. Even though I tweet through the angst, I would not give up any of my many possessions to see Luis Scola out of the starting lineup. I would just expect that common sense would come in at some point, and they would change it.
In a game when they're playing well, like, what else is there to tweet about other than Luis Scola? Sometimes you need him there as like this necessary foil.
Yeah, we got to tweet about. I'm not going to tweet about like Solomon Hill or LaVoy Allen. I didn't even know those guys were in the league until I started watching this series. Okay, we got another one from Mitch Robson. And should all of Scola's minutes go to Norm with Carroll at the four? We kind of addressed this. Yes.
Yeah, he was on the podcast where I suggested this, and he was very much in agreement. So I don't think there's anything more to say there. I think that small lineup would be awesome. And to the original point about the Miami Heat, I think that'd be a nice look to go against the Miami Heat with as well.
Yeah. Again, yeah, so far ahead of ourselves here, but we're feeling
really confident. It's like a week from now. It's okay. We're going to have to get that lineup some run in order for them to, you know, be ready for the Warriors in the finals.
So. Yeah, that's right. We're definitely going to do that. I don't know if this question was meant for the podcast. I think it was just people seeing a thread open up on Raptors HQ, so they started commenting, but I'm going to treat it as one. This is Mikey Money asking, how is Monte Ellis playing more minutes than George Hill?
That's a good one. Monte Ellis is crap. I don't know. It's like 3 minutes more. It wasn't that much tonight, but Monte Ellis is kind of bad. And I'm very happy that he's not on my team, and I'd be upset if he was on my team as the lead guard, no less. So George Hill's awesome. He's such a good defender. He's been really good on Lowry in this series. I think that's a big reason why Lowry's shooting has been off, as much as Lowry's shooting has been off lately. But I think George Hill is doing a pretty good job of getting in there and hassling him. So yeah, more George Hill minutes if you want to see the Pacers win, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that Hill should, if not be playing more than Ellis, at least shooting more. I think that they should probably be about equal for those two. You know, Hill tends to shoot a better percentage from three, and that's where they need to make up ground. So
I'd like to see them run I wouldn't like to see it, because I think it would be really good. But
I hope they don't listen to this podcast, because we've pretty much given them the game plan for game four.
But if they run like some small lineups, I'd like to see them run like Ellis, George pick and rolls, and then just like find, you know, Miles and Hill on the perimeter and Turner even for spot up looks. I think that'd be kind of devastating. So
the poorest of poor man Warriors. Oh man, Miles Turner, the new Harrison Barnes.
Pretty much. Miles, can we talk about Miles Turner?
We could. What do you want to talk
he's
about?
He's so good. I just want to say how good he is. I love that guy, man. He's going to be awesome for a long time.
He's pretty good. He's got to hold his temper in check. He was pretty angry for a lot of the game tonight, and that kind of hurt him.
I was so like frustrated with DeRozan that when Turner like blocked him and then got in his face, I kind of like liked it. I don't know.
I'm always good for a basketball fight. I flipped over to the Mavericks Thunder game during halftime, and Raymond Felton almost got in a fight with Steven Adams, and I would have been all about that.
That is not a good idea if you're Raven Felton. That is the last guy in the NBA I would fight.
He started it, as Raven Felton is wanted to do. We have three questions from David Mann to close it off here. David Mann got all his questions in well before the game started, so
nice.
We will address them. If we let DeMar DeRozan walk, does Lowry ask Masai to be traded?
That's interesting. I don't think so, because I mean, it might just work in Lowry's advantage too. I mean, hey, we think about what they would add with the cap space that, you know, a departed DeRozan might create. Maybe there's a trade to be made with one of Ross's, like maybe Ross's or Valanciunas' contract, perhaps, to bring in a big name. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there. So I don't think, like, because DeRozan leaves, I don't think that means Lowry will, like, want to be out. I don't think the team will be bad necessarily, because there's things you can do. But maybe it, like, boosts the amount of responsibility on Lowry, and he can put up some crazy numbers in a contract season as well. I don't know. I don't think so. I think
that maybe he plays better. I don't think he asks to be traded, and I don't know if they honor that. He would obviously be a huge trade chip for other teams to come calling for. But
yeah, I mean, maybe if the Raptors like really suck next year and Lowry is having that on the expiring deal, maybe they trade him then. But like, if the finals against the Warriors is too far ahead of ourselves, we're getting too far ahead of ourselves with this whole thing.
All right, we'll move on to David Mann's second of three questions. If Batum messaged Masai, I assume on a cell phone, that he wants to come to Toronto during free agency summer, would you let DeMar DeRozan walk? I think how the money works, and I'm sure Daniel Hackett will tweet at us within 3 minutes here, that if we let DeRozan walk, that the Raptors still don't have the money to sign a UFA.
Like a max,
at the maximum contract.
I love Batum. I think he's awesome. I don't think he's as good a player as DeMar. Maybe that's controversial. Maybe I think Batum does more, but I think he does. I think his offense is not as good. I think their playmaking is, when DeMar is actually engaged in playmaking, I think they're pretty similar in that regard. Batum's obviously a better defender, but I think it might, because Batum has excelled as the lead sort of, I mean, not really the lead guard, but he's sort of excelled in a playmaking role next to Kemba Walker. And I don't think, you know, him and Lowry's styles would really mesh very well. Like if Batum was, you know, the secondary ball handler. I think maybe if Batum goes back to his Portland role where he's more of just a glue guy, but that'd be fine. But yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see them just have both. Like, obviously Hackett just tweeted in that we don't have the money to do that, so never mind. But I prefer DeRozan to Batum as a player. It's close, but I think I'd take DeRozan.
Yeah, I think DeRozan's offensive high end is a little bit better. Batum is like that ultimate glue guy, and ideally you get that kind of production out of Carroll if he's completely healthy. And I mean, that's yet to be seen, but I think that Carroll's high end could be around where Batum is right now. We don't know where Batum's high end is, and it's difficult to compare those two. But I don't know if putting Batum and Carroll together accomplishes, you know, having a go-to guy from your two or three position. So that's that. His third question.
Batum's also, just one last point on Batum. He's very injury prone, especially the last couple seasons. Like last year, he was awful because he was hurt all season with back issues and things. So I don't know.
That's also true. Last question from David Mann. How many draft deleted tweets has James Johnson made so far in the pro season, and which hashtag did he use?
I forgot James Johnson existed.
Man, he's been Instagramming a lot.
Has he really? I don't follow any players. I don't really use Instagram, so
I was obligated for a long time as a social media columnist, and I just never bothered to unfollow them. And he does that a lot. He's not much for hashtags, though. I think he's recognized that he has bad feet. He's not good enough to play, and he's going to get to go somewhere else.
I'm just really happy we're beyond the, oh, is James Johnson going to be the guy to guard Paul George thing? Because no.
We're not beyond that. Have you read the comment sections?
I try not to, but...
Okay, yeah. It's still a thing.
Oh, God. Okay. James Johnson is bad, people. He's bad. There's nothing else I can say.
So, just cleaning up on that Nick Batum topic, Daniel Hackett, our unofficial guy who tweets in stats as we're going with the show, which is super helpful, and we appreciate that.
Yeah.
We'd only have 18 million, so... Probably not enough. Definitely not enough for like a max, but probably not enough to even offer a deal to a player like Batum.
Yeah. I also want to touch on one thing that we just got into. I'm not exactly sure what it's in relation to. Let me just go to the tweet thread here. Julian tweets in saying, so he wants less Ross. He says he has the team's worst defensive rating and it's not a new thing. Check the last two playoffs. What I would say to that is the last two playoffs, sure, Ross is really bad. I think you look at this season, I believe Ross had maybe the best on-off defensive rating differential in terms of the team was a lot worse with him off the floor. I did a piece on this midseason. I think it held up for the most part. He was really good defensively this season, at least in terms of team defense and the team being, good defensively with him on the floor. I think a lot of that was the Lowry and the bench mob lineup being really good defensively as a whole, but, Ross was a part of that, obviously. Just because he's bad in the last two playoffs, in the last, 11 games, I don't think that necessarily means he's automatically a bad playoff defender. Maybe he's had a bad defensive rating or whatever in the first two games of the series, but that is like a masterclass of small samples. So what I would go with that.
In this series, I think you can hide Ross too as a one-on-one defender. He's good to he's a good team defender, but in the next series or next couple series, I think that he'll probably be prone more to seeing the mistakes that we've seen from Ross in the playoffs. But again, probably getting ahead of ourselves on that. Okay, let's call it there, Sean. Do you have anything coming down in the next week or so?
I don't know if I do. I'll have something probably Tuesday after game 5. And also promote this, if you're in Toronto next Wednesday, April 27th, myself, Daniel Reynolds, our managing editor here, Blake Murphy of Raptors Republic, and Will Liu of The Score / Raptors Republic, we're going to be doing a live podcast at Tall Boys Bar, 838 Bloor Street West in Toronto. We're doing it at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 7 o'clock. It starts at 7:30. We're doing a live pod. We'll just sort of talk playoffs, talk Raptors, maybe some other NBA stuff, maybe blogger life. We'll care about that, right? So if you want to go to this thing, we've been tweeting out links. I have a pinned tweet on my Twitter account at Woodley Sean. You can go there. It's limited space. You got to register a spot, but it is free, and there are $5 pints of steam whistle the entire night. So check that out if you're in Toronto. It should be a lot of fun, and we'd love to see you out.
Yeah, that is excellent. So definitely go check that out. I will not be there because I'm 1500 kilometers away, but that does sound awesome.
What a lame excuse.
I would drive. I think Russell can drive. You could probably get on him for that. But I do have a decent excuse. But we will be back for another live show on Saturday afternoon after game 4. Look for the post game thread on raptorshq.com. Tune in from Twitter at raptorshq or on our Facebook page, which is raptorshq.com. You can also subscribe to archived episodes of this show and our weekly podcast, The Headquarters, on iTunes. You can give us a rating review, and that is always greatly appreciated. Thank you, Sean, for joining me.
Thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and that is HQ Overtime, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.